To talk about topological order from quantum fractal code. And I said exotic, that's because I currently don't know their properties fully. So exotic just means that it's beyond conventional topological order. And so as you know, fractals are very interesting. Yeah, this is a fractal, which is broccoli actually. So you can actually eat this. But recently, we physicists have seen that this fractal geometry plays a very important role in understanding and classifying quantum phases of correlated spin systems. And so the goal of today's talk is to
actually, so commonly starts if it's non-topological order, it says it's non-topological order. Follow traditional non-Fermi equation.
Oh, yes. A similar idea, so yeah. Well, but anyway, today's goal is to construct a model with quantum fractal symmetries and discuss their physical and coding properties. So yeah, roughly speaking, I want to create a quantum broccoli and discuss their properties. Okay, so the talk is based on the following two papers and the first one actually talks about classical fractal code, and the second one will talk about quantum. And well, the second paper is still in preparation, but I try my best to convey the basic idea and motivations behind it. But I think it makes more sense to talk about first about classical fractal code, so let me use this paper as a sort of motivation. So for the first part of the talk, the central question is I would like to address is the following. What is the limit on the amount of information that can be reliably stored in a finite physical system? So there are two notions, amount and reliability. So to be more specific, let's consider the following situation. So you have lattice of spins. And these spins are interacting locally with each other. And we think of encoding bits of information into their degenerate ground states. So suppose you have two ground states, then you can just label it as 0 and 1, and you can encode one bit of information. But the question is, how many bits of information can be encoded and how reliably? And for this program setting, the following bound is known to hold. The local code bound, which is k times d to the capital 1 over d, smaller than n. So here, k is the number of logical bits, so which means there are 2 to the k degenerate ground states. D is the code distance, which is just a quantitative measure of the reliability of encoding. So if d is large, it's reliable against errors and noises. Finally, n is the total number of spins. So this really shows the sort of trade-off between the amount of information and the reliability of encoding. And this was proven by Bravi, Taha, and Pauling quite recently.
So this for any gap, the local Hamiltonian?
It's I'm considering commuting frustration.
Commuting, sorry, I understood.
Yes. Okay, so.
So if you go beyond the commuting projector, do you have still similar thing or have a better result?
let's say it's a very good question. For example, you could think about spin glasses, but spin glass has a metastable state. So it's not strictly ground states. So for such a situation, if you are a metastable state, maybe you can beat this bound. But for such problem, it is usually difficult to find the ground state or metastable. So there are another trade-off between.
But the rigorous results are only for the community operators.
Exactly. So for this, so this is the bound. So then
so the K will be the exactly degenerate ground state.
Exactly degenerate, yes. So then, of course, we are interested in a system which saturates the bound. But unfortunately, previously found spin systems were far below the theoretical limit. So to see this point more let us look at two dimensions first. In two dimensions, bound is like this. K square root d smaller than n. So here I plotted the bound in a logarithmic scale. So 1 LL square, 1 LL square. And the distance is, by its definition, the distance d is upper bounded by the total number of spin. So that's the horizontal line, and this slope is the local code bound. Now let us look at the prototypical example, which is a repetition code. The idea is easy. We encode 0 as a repetition of zeros and 1 as a repetition of ones. And this is very robust, reliable encoding. That's because suppose I originally encoded information 0 to a sequence of zeros, even if someone flips my spin sum, I can reliably go back to the original state as long as less than half of the spins are flipped. So in order to more rigorously define the reliability, we use the notion of distance, which is just a separation between these two ground states. So in this case, since all the spin values are different, we say that the distance is equal to n, the total number of spins. Therefore, the code distance is equal to n. So this repetition code sits here. So in terms of the reliability, it's saturating, of course. But in terms of the number of encoded bits, it's not saturating the bound. And one possible idea is to modify. Yes?
So distance is a classical distance?
Classical. It's all classical right now.
But I thought the paper you cited is a quantum.
I will talk about quantum later, but now we live in a classical world.
Yeah.
They derived both.
Huh?
They derived classical and quantum bounds in the same paper.
Oh, this is the classical.
Yeah, classical.
Thank you.
Both of them are not known, and they discovered both classical and quantum. So we could consider a copy of repetition codes. The idea is just split the entire system into smaller parts and use individual parts as individual repetition codes. But this just gives you a family of repetition codes sitting along this dotted line. So it's far below the theoretical limit. And here I would like to remark that but this repetition code are basically the ones that are currently used in our laptop or PCs, because we are using hard disk drives to store information, and that uses magnetic materials or ferromagnets. So that's basically the repetition. Okay, so here is the first main result of the first part of the talk. So I'm going to construct a local code which asymptotically saturates the bound. By which I mean that the code has the following coding property: k of the order of l, d of the order of l to the 2 minus epsilon. So once I can have such a model, then I can cover the entire region. Then, well, how do we do that? And here comes the fractal. So we use fractal geometries arising in the Sierpinski triangle. So this is a Sierpinski triangle. Probably you have seen this before, but basically you can see that triangular patterns appear at different length scales. And its fractal dimension is equal to 1.585. Which means the number of triangles scales up as if the spatial dimension is log 3 over log 2. And we physicists, I think, for a long time, we thought that this is just a mathematical object. But it turns out this is physically realizable. And more than 10 years ago, Newman and Moore noticed that the Sierpinski triangle pattern appears as a ground state of interacting Hamiltonian. So to see this point, let us first map the Sierpinski triangle into a square lattice. So here, if you look at patterns of spin ones, then it's a Sierpinski triangle. Then you may notice that it's not immediately obvious, but you notice that this ground state satisfies the following local constraint, which is a plus b is equal to c modulo 2. Maybe you can check. Oh, this 1 plus 0 is equal to 1. 1 plus 1 is equal to 0. But these constraints are satisfied at every bracket. Therefore, if you take the following Hamiltonian, which checks the parity of three spins, the Sierpinski triangle arises as a ground state. OK, so this is, I think, interesting. But even more interestingly, the system supports multiple ground states. The reason is, of course, the system doesn't have, a ground state doesn't have a translation symmetry. So if you shift a lattice position by one, then it's another ground state. So you can create a lot of ground states. And even more, this is actually what is called a cellular automaton. So if I pick up arbitrary spin sequence in the first row, then actually this will automatically determine other spin values on the lattice. So in other words, a ground state can be uniquely specified by an initial condition. And this is actually a history of time evolution cellular automaton realized in two-dimensional spin system. But here the point is the system has a large number of ground states, so it is probably good for storing information. That is true, actually. So this system, I can rigorously show that this system is a good classical error correcting code with the following property: k of the order of l, d of the order of l to the log 3 over log 2. So here the distance scales with fractal dimension, which means, so basically there are 2 to the l degenerate ground states, and I need to check the distance between every possible pairs of ground states, and I define the distance to be the minimal separation. And it turns out the minimal distance is lower bounded by the following function. Anyway, skipping over the mathematical details, this code sits here. So it's obviously better than repetition codes. But the problem is it's still below a theoretical limit. So what should we do? And the idea is actually very simple, straightforward. We use generalization of the Sierpinski triangle. This Sierpinski triangle uses three-dimensional spins 0, 1, 2. And its fractal dimension is 1.631. So it's larger than the original one. That's a good sign. And actually, this is also physically realizable. You just need to impose the constraint, which is a plus b is equal to c modulo 3. Then again, I can show that this fractal code has the following coding property. This is, again, a mathematical result, rigorous result. But the point is, it's slightly better than the previous fractal code. Then probably you know what we need to do. We need to consider Sierpinski triangle with higher dimensional spins. So here P should be some prime number from some algebraic reason. But the point is the fractal dimension scales like this. This goes to 2 as P goes to infinity. Therefore, we can have a code which has the following coding properties. So it asymptotically saturated bound. And one might wonder if it's actually allowed to use higher dimensional spins or not. And it turns out it's OK. The reason is because right now I'm measuring the number of encoded information k as the number of encodable p-dimensional spins. So there are some extra factors which account for the usage of the higher dimensional spins. And if you really want to stick to two-dimensional spins, then maybe you can simulate p-dimensional spins by using two-dimensional spins. For example, if you have 5 over two-dimensional spins, it's 32-dimensional, so you can simulate 31-dimensional spins on this one. OK, so that's all about two dimensions, fractals. But what about higher dimensions, like 3-dimensional, 4-dimensional, or 10-dimensional? Fortunately, there exists a higher dimensional generalization of the Sierpinski triangle. So this is a three-dimensional example made of a Lego block. But the point is, for d-dimensional Sierpinski triangle with p-dimensional spins, this is a fractal dimension, and it goes to d as p goes to infinity. Therefore, this classical fractal called saturated bound in higher dimensions too. So this is the result. And here I would like to make two comments. So these results are all rigorous, mathematically rigorous. And I actually found that no one seriously read my proof part of my paper. So that's why I like to emphasize it. And the second comment is more, I think, interesting. That is, it turns out the number of encoded bits scales like area, and reliability of encoding scales like volume. And I found this is quite fascinating because we only used two assumptions, that is locality of interaction and discreteness of the space. And we somehow found area law. And as you know, there is another business which concerns information storage capacity, that is, of course, the Bekenstein bound and black hole physics. It also, where area law plays an important role. So it's quite interesting to see that to observe area law in such a remotely, totally remote subject. Anyway, so that's all about classical fractal code. And so this is a classical bound, and the lower part is actually the quantum local code bound, which was also proven by Bravi, Tarhal, and Pauling. And then a natural arising question is, of course, does quantum fractal code saturate this bound? Well, first of all, what is quantum fractal code? To ask this question, I must mention a very beautiful work, recent work by Ha. So he basically proposed a model. He called it the cubic model. This has a pair of fractal-like logical operators. So this may be viewed as a first example of the quantum fractal code. And here, this cubic pictures are his interaction terms of his model. So that's where the name comes from. And the cubic code is known to have a very peculiar and mysterious physical properties. And for me, I think a puzzle concerning his cubic code comes from the lack of the general framework to construct a family of quantum fractal code. So in this talk, and a reminder of the talk, I would like to concentrate on constructing quantum fractal code, a family of quantum fractal code. And unfortunately, I couldn't prove that this quantum fractal code saturated bound. So I will only concentrate on the construction of the model.
So is this cubic code the quantum fractal code, or do you know anything about this?
What the cubic
code, is that quantum fractal code?
It has fractal-like logical operators.
But whether they have some relation to quantum bound?
So for the cubic code and for quantum fractal code, the finding the lower bound on the code distance is very, very challenging. And at this moment, very formidable.
Will the system need to have a specific size in order to have a bigger bound or something?
The specific size. So if you put periodic boundary condition, then
maybe open boundary condition.
Open boundary condition, then I think the system size doesn't play an important role.
So, but for the open boundary condition, do you have a situation where As system grows, the number of qubits also grow, logical qubits.
Yes, yes, yes. For these fractal models, I will talk about three-dimensional model.
Yeah.
Then the number of logical qubits basically scales linearly.
Not like area.
So it's L, basically. It's
because in two-dimensional, you say it's they grow like a square for three-dimensional.
Oh, yes, yes. So it's linear, not area.
I see. So it's less.
Actually, the theoretical upper bound for, okay, let's consider D plus two-dimensional quantum code. Then the best code has K of the order of L to the D and D of the order L to the D plus 1. So it's like one-dimensional lower. Okay, so it's all about fractals. So now let's construct a model.
So maybe I have a question. For the classical code, the distance is defined as a number of mismatched the qubits.
Yes, yes, yes.
But for the quantum, do you define it similarly?
We need to define, we will define it similarly. And I'm going to use the what are called stabilizer formalism. And for this stabilizer formalism, you can first check the distance in x basis, and then you rotate it on the z basis. And then you take the minimal of it.
Oh, I see.
Basically,
you just take two derivatives.
Yeah.
X basis distance and the z basis distance.
Okay. I mean, the model I'm constructing has a nice dual structure, so that's.
So it's actually CSS code.
CSS code. Yeah.
But when you choose, when you change basis, whether the. So when you're changing basis, the you can choose a basis of ground state, which is a eigenstate for z or x. Is that right?
Z or x, yes.
Oh,
yes.
I see. So there's no superposition.
No.
There's a basis which are purely in z or purely.
Yes,
in x.
The reason is because it is a stabilizer formalism. That's very nice. Has nice properties. Okay, so in order to construct a model, I first need to develop a sort of new theoretical framework to discuss and construct translation symmetric stabilizer Hamiltonians by using the language of polynomials over finite fields. It's just a mathematical trick. But then I will construct quantum fractals, which has fractal logical operators. Then I will discuss its properties, including some ground state properties and quasi-particles and coding properties. So, okay, let me start with this one. So, my construction is based on the stabilizer formalism, which is a very basic theoretical framework to discuss quantum error correcting code, which was originally proposed by someone in this room. But the basic idea is to encode qubits in degenerate ground states with math gap or finite energy gap. And here is the Hamiltonian of the stabilizer Hamiltonian, which is Sj are Pauli operators, which commute with each other. And ground state can be found by minimizing each interaction term. So it satisfies Sj psi equals to psi. So the goal of a stabilizer formalism is to design Sj interaction terms such that the system is degenerate and the distance between degenerate ground states are well separated from each other. So there is no local operator connecting different ground states. So to quantify the reliability of encoding more rigorously, we use the notion of logical operators. Logical operators are Pauli operators which commute with the Hamiltonian. So they don't change the energy of the system, but they act non-trivially inside the ground state space. So basically, if you apply a logical operator to a ground state, you can change a ground state to another one. So that's where the name comes from. So logical operators are responsible for transformation of encoded information. And roughly speaking, if you have a large logical operator, which means it takes a large amount of operation to change from one ground state to the other, so which means the encoding is reliable. But so this part may be a bit technical, but for the purpose of constructing translation symmetric Hamiltonians, it is better to use polynomials over finite field to represent Pauli operators. So I'm going to describe the idea for one-dimensional case. So these -2, -1, -0, -1, -2 are site indices. So for this situation, I define some polynomial f whose coefficients are just 0 or 1. I define the corresponding Pauli operators GF and XF such that if CJ is equal to 1, we apply Pauli operator on that side. If CJ is equal to 0, we don't do anything. So here is an example. If F is equal to 1 plus X plus X squared, which means GF is equal to G0, G1, G2. So F just recalls the positions where we want to apply Pauli operators non-trivially. The reason why this formalism is good is because we can easily represent a translation of Pauli operators. So for example, xf is just x plus x cube, square plus x cube. Its corresponding Pauli operator is g1, g2, g3. So it's shifted by one side. So in general, just by applying these X operators, you can shift the positions of Pauli operators.
So what's his idea here?
So what's the idea?
So find at the field. Which symbol represents the element of a field?
What, sorry?
You said the finite fields.
Oh, so finite field meaning that it's just
I know what's the finite field, but your expression, which one is the finite field?
Oh, the CJ is integers, coefficients.
The CJ?
CJ, yeah.
So what is XJ?
XJ are just polynomials. So this is a polynomial.
Oh, so F is a polynomial whose coefficient is
a finite field.
In the finite field.
Yes.
And then how this relates to the Pauli operator?
So this is the example, which is like, one is x to the zero. So if I find x to the zero, then I apply a Pauli operator at zero site. X represents this one. X squared represents this
one.
What's Z2? Z2 is a Pauli operator acting on the second
cube. At the second site.
Yes.
Site label.
Yeah.
I see.
So basically, F runs from minus infinity to infinity.
I see.
And the CJ is the record of positions where you want to apply.
So this will define the one-dimensional system. Then.
One-dimensional system. And if you want to discuss two-dimensional system, then you use X and Y.
Oh, I see.
X, Y, Z, W, and so on.
OK. I see.
So this is just a pattern of Pauli operators, positions of Pauli operators.
But if the coefficient can be other than 1 and 0. So here the field is just 1 and 0.
1 and 0, but
suppose you have some other field, then they have different coefficients, and how do you handle the coefficient?
Okay. So right now I'm discussing coefficients over F2. That is because I'm interested in stabilizer code constructed with qubits.
Okay.
And in this case, if CJ is equal to 2, which means Z square, which is identity. So it's equal to zero. That's where it comes from. If I use F3, then I will. I need to use generalized Pauli operators.
I see. So the cube is 1.
Yes.
So this coefficient actually is a power of this generating operator.
Yes, exactly.
But this way you always get a classic model, because you're only using Z.
At this moment, yes. But in the next slide, I'm going to represent the toric code in this framework. So is any question about this representation? Is it OK? OK, so let me move to the toric code. So as an example, let us represent the toric code by using polynomials. So this is the toric code. It has two stabilizer operators, startum and procedure. But it turns out this form is not convenient for our purposes. So I'm going to modify the model a little bit by grouping two qubits into a single composite particle with higher inner dimensions. And I'm going to apply local unitaries. Then it turns out, this model is equivalent to this model on a square lattice where you have two qubits on each side. So two qubits on each side. Then the stabilizer generators are the following form. Here, ZA acts on the first qubit on the side. ZB acts on the second qubit on the side. So you have two qubits each side. So you have Z term and X term. And you can actually see that they commute with each other. Now let me represent this interaction terms by using polynomials. So first, this G term. So minus 1, 0, 0, 1 is the lattice height index. So first, let us concentrate on GA. GA acts on 0, 0, and 1, 0, because it's positions. So it corresponds to G1 plus X. On the other hand, GB acts on 0, 0, 0, 1. So it's Z1 plus Y. So in total, you have the following stabilizer generator. So 1 plus x acts on the first qubit GA. 1 plus y corresponds to GB, the second qubit. So this is the polynomial representation of the toric code. So you have two rows. Next, for x operators, these are the x operators. Then you notice that the Pauli operators are the following. 1 plus y inverse and 1 plus x inverse. And of course, you have that all the translations of these stabilizer generators. And these translations are obtained by just applying x or y. OK, so this is the introduction terms. And I think this is very simple now. Now, maybe you notice that there is some duality between these operators. That is, so here you have 1 plus x, and here you have 1 plus x inverse, 1 plus y, and 1 plus y inverse. And it turns out this duality is a sort of required, essentially required, in order for stabilizer generators to commute with each other. So by dual, I mean that we first exchange the upper row and lower row, and we do the transformation, which takes x and y to its inverses. So here is a more general form of the model. So I'm considering a model where two qubits live on each side. And you take arbitrary polynomials, alpha and beta. Then, so this is a Z operators, Pauli Z operators, stabilizer generators. Stabilizer generator X type are defined by taking its dual. And alpha bar is a dual of alpha, which is obtained by taking the transformation, which takes X to X inverse, Y to Y inverse. Beta bar is a dual of beta. And as long as the system has the following form, they commute with each other. Is there any question?
Yeah, I'm confused why you need to switch. I mean, the first row I thought was the first qubit in each set.
Mm-hmm.
The second row is the second qubit in each set.
The reason why we need to switch is here, XA is in this direction. But GA is in Y direction.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, so I understand this slide,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand this next slide where you're saying that this is a required condition. I mean, I would think commutation should only affect within the same row.
The point is, so you also need to show that this G type logical, this G stabilizer and all the translations of X stabilizers need to commute. So this and this, all the translations.
So you don't have translation within the unit cell because you enlarge the unit cell.
Sorry?
You enlarge the unit cell to include two qubits.
Right? Two qubits
so
each side.
You cannot translate from the upper one to the lower one. You can only translate from one line inside one unit cell to another unit cell.
This to this. Yes. Yes. So because this system has translation symmetries, so suppose you take some G-type stabilizer operators, and then this needs to commute with translation all types of translations of stable X-type stabilizer logical stabilizer generators. This commutation is satisfied, I mean, if the model has the following duality. So as long as stabilizer generators have the following form, we know that this is a stabilizer code. They all commute with each other. But this is just a mathematical. Any question?
Yeah.
starting from this Turing code example, even after you do these local unitaries, does the resulting duality have any geometric meaning when you want to transport it back to
I didn't find any geometric reasoning. This duality is required just in order to for commutations.
Right.
Okay, so let me proceed for now. Please stop me if you have questions. So here is the toric code representation via polynomials. And you know that the logical operators of the toric code has these string-like logical operators. But the point is, if I'm given this 1 plus x and 1 plus y as an input parameters, then by using that, actually, I can easily calculate logical operators just by doing some algebra, some polynomials of a finite field. Okay, but now let us use this framework to construct quantum fractal codes. For this purpose, let me briefly review that fractal geometries can be actually generated by polynomials of a finite field. So first, let us consider the following simple polynomial, 1 plus x over a finite field F2. Then we consider powers of F. Then here, this is the powers of F. And this is over a finite field. So for example, for F squared, it should be 1 plus 2x plus x squared, but 2x is equal to 0. But you can write down the powers of F in a more geometrical way. Then you notice that this is a realization of the Sierpinski triangle. So you could represent the Sierpinski triangle by adding x-axis and x variable and y variable. Then here is the Sierpinski triangle represented as polynomials. So f, bold letter f, is equal to 1 plus fy plus f squared y squared and so on. Now the first row is 1, the second row is f, the third row is f squared, and so on. Well, the next example is 1 plus x squared. It will create the following fractals. And this model is often sometimes called the Fibonacci model because of the weird fractal dimension. But again, the entire fractal geometry is represented by this 1 plus fy and so on. You can generalize this formalism to more general finite field. So this is 1 plus x over F3, three-dimensional spins. So these are the correspondences. OK. Yeah.
I just wondered, do you find this yourself, or is it already in the literature?
Of what?
Do you find this relation?
I think this is very
well known,
and these are basically studied by Wolfram in his new kind of science. Yes. Okay, so now I think this may be the most important slide in the talk, so I'm gonna describe the definition of the quantum fractal code. So it's constructed in the three-dimensional lattice where two qubits live on each side. And it has two input parameters. So you can basically choose arbitrary polynomials, A and B, which has only x variables. Then depending on these parameters, we design interaction terms as follows. So G type stabilizers have 1 plus AY and 1 plus BZ. This defines the stabilizer generators. And x is just obtained by taking its dual. So this is the interaction terms. And we already know that they commute with each other. Well, the question is why this form? Well, the reason is they have fractal logical operators. Here I represented logical operators by using polynomials. It's not intuitive, but the point is this A bar is generated by A. No, A, bold letter A by A, B by B, and so on. So these are the fractal logical operators. So we can rigorously show that they commute with all the stabilizer generators, and they may anti-commute with each other. So the quantum fractal code has...
AX is a polynomial?
AA is polynomial.
AX, BX, A and B both polynomial.
Yes, yes.
What kind of polynomial? Okay, that's a finite term.
Finite degree.
So like what?
1 plus X or 1 plus X, X squared. Any finite degree polynomial.
And why this became fractal? Let's see. This capital, oh, I see this capital A is the one you construct using this
yes, yes.
Fractal.
So for this one, A, X, Y is a fractal living on X, Y plane.
But then there's issue that this would represent an interaction with many, many terms. So the number of spin, number of body in this row, linearly as system size.
No, these are the logical operators. So interaction terms are these two.
Oh, I see.
So these are just symmetry operators which commute with
the Hamiltonian. Interactions are over there, I see.
Actually, we want large logical operators in order for the system to
so
work.
So the Z, so that's in the three dimension, oh, I see.
It's three dimension. So you have X, Y, Z variables.
I see, okay.
So this is the fractal logical operator. So again, as long as
are they all the logical operator?
Yes, 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 yes.
So those are all the logical operators.
Okay,
so,
okay,
I mean,
okay.
All the logical operators are generated by this this type.
Okay, so it's highly depend on the system size.
Okay.
And but if you put open boundary conditions,
yes.
Then these are the old ones. And if you put periodic boundary conditions, then when the system is, the system size is equal to L is equal to P to the M, the power of P, then these are the ones.
So let's assume open boundary conditions, so I just make sure. So all the logical operators are generated by these four,
yes.
Four types.
Yes. I mean, it depends on how you take open boundary conditions, but.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you break the logical operators in smaller pieces that's
no,
still
no,
in the
no.
ground state?
No, no, no.
How do you know?
How do I know? Smaller pieces. What do you mean by smaller pieces? That's
like the product of two smaller pieces with less qubits.
Less qubits.
Less qubits.
Okay, okay. Less qubits.
Such that they are not. They are both in the ground state. You know?
Okay, okay. It's possible. Actually, we can still shrink the size of the logical operators.
But then. Isn't it a problem? So isn't it a problem that you can write these operators like the product of operators that still are in the ground state?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the question. Can you break it in the product of two operators that still commute with
two operators?
Oh. Yeah.
But I mean, so, of course, this is just some particular representation of logical operators, and you could find smaller representations, but I can show that the support region of these logical operators are growing with respect to the system size.
Okay, maybe I can ask you better later.
Yes, yes, yes. So this is just the definition of the model, and so here.
See, when I say quantum fractal code, because it's connected both Z and X, that's a reason?
Yes, yes, yes. It's actually, so both X and Z are logical operators, are very global objects. That's why it works as a quantum miraculous.
So whether one does one have to show that you cannot do some kind of local unitary to map all operating to Z.
Ah, exactly, exactly.
If that's a, whether there's such thing, abstraction, or I don't know.
That's a question of whether this quantum fractal code is actually a quantum code or not.
Exactly, yeah.
It is. It
how,
is.
How do you test?
How do I test?
Whether there's some topological environment.
I mean, some of your X operators add like mu, some of your Z operators, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean logical operator with the anti-commute.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yes. So these are the logical operators, and I can somehow show that,
okay.
Rigorously show that they cannot be shrinked into
exactly.
A really small region.
So the key is that the logical operator do not have to commute.
For
the classical code, the logical operator always commute.
Yes, because we are looking only at some particular axis. So for example, in the case of the two-dimensional Ising model, you have logical operator, which is all x, tensor product of all x, and single z. And this single z is small. That's why we cannot use it to for quantum error correcting. But anyway, the model so has, well, exact four types of logical operators, fractal. One of them live on xy plane, the other one live on xz plane, and it's dual. Okay, so this is the definition of the quantum fractal code. And
so those logical operators create a fractal on the slice of the plane, right?
Yes. So now let me briefly talk about properties of them. So in the very first slide, I said it's topologically ordered. It's exotic. And so first, let me say that it is actually topologically ordered. So topological order is, as you know, a new kind of order that cannot be described by local order parameters. But let us define it by using the stability against local perturbations. So let's consider a gapped system with degeneracy. Then we add some local perturbation. So perturbations are local and it's finite. Then this will, of course, change the energy spectrum of the lattice. But when the system is topologically ordered, this energy splitting is very negligible and it's exponentially suppressed with respect to the system size. So at the thermodynamic limit, the degeneracy is protected and the ground state properties are stable against local perturbation. So this is the definition of topological order I would like to use in this talk.
So,
yes.
So it's also here you have to add something like this has to happen for any two ground states, however you rotate in the ground state manifold.
Exactly. That's
so
that's
the
why
accents that because you can build models without topological order where you have this property for just in one basis.
Mm-hmm.
So this must be true in every basis. Right?
Every basis. So any types of local perturbation. And that's why we say that the topologically ordered systems do not have local order parameters. Okay, so then the question is, quantum fractals satisfy this condition, and it is actually easy to see that because quantum fractal codes are quantum code, where the code distance, the reliability goes to infinity as the system size goes to infinity. In such a case, according to the result by Bravi, Hastings, and Mikalakis, we automatically know that the system is topologically ordered. So that's why I claim the model has topological order. But it's very weird. The first of all, the number of ground states is not finite. And under periodic boundary conditions, it's very difficult to calculate the exact degeneracy. Basically, you need to solve this equation and count the number of solutions of gamma. But the point is, this equation has some discrete scale symmetry where if you increase the system size by factor of p, then the number of degeneracy, number of logical bits, logical qubits grows by a factor of p. So you can see that this is increasing linearly. So, okay, so this is very interesting because this is a topological order with extensive degeneracy. The interesting thing is that the model has exponentially many degenerate ground state, but even if you add perturbation, these exponentially many ground states somehow stays together. This energy splitting is exponentially suppressed, and the energy gap remains protected.
Why exponential? Didn't you say you have a linear number of?
So basically, the number of logical qubits is L, which means there are 2 to the L degenerate ground state. So if you have 32 ground states, which means K is equal to 5. So that's why I said exponential. So, yeah, I think this is very.
But exponential only linear side of system, volume system.
Yes. So E L.
Yeah. So probably, maybe, yeah. Extensive usually means volume.
Oh yes. Yeah.
That's, there's a little.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a sum of some kind of. Okay.
Linear. Yeah. Degeneracy. Yeah. And, so, as. So it's probably obvious that this topological order, exotic topological order, is beyond descriptions of the conventional topological QFT, because TQFT usually starts from an axiom where Lagrangian is invariant under local deformation, but which basically implies that the number of degenerate ground states should be finite.
Do you have a minimal degeneracy with the periodic boundary condition?
Minimal. Yeah. Oh, okay, with periodic boundary condition, I mean, I can design system size such that there is only a single ground state.
For any size of the system?
For some specific size.
Yeah, but this size, what if you have a limit of this size go to infinity?
Oh, it can go to infinity.
I see. The reason I ask this question is the following. Whether it's possible that for those periodic boundary conditions with only one degeneracy, we say, okay, system are perfect, no defect.
I see.
Concern is that for other periodic boundary conditions, maybe there's some kind of so-called internal mismatch.
Okay.
Although the system is periodic, but maybe there's some invisible internal fault line, and the degeneracy actually due to this defect or fault line. That's some kind of a thing. It's also related to the following, in the sense that for the open boundary condition, you always have a problem, you always have a degeneracy. But you may say, okay, the degeneracy coming from the surface or maybe fault line or something. For the periodic boundary condition with some kind of round period, you'll have some surface or something.
I actually think in a very opposite way, in a sense that because the system has this discrete scale symmetry, so when the system size is the power of p, I thought it's a good length. But, I don't know, it's very, but anyway, at this moment, I can just say that it is exotic topological order.
Excuse me, what you want to say about one half number of constants?
This is just a formula I found. So basically, if you want to find the number of ground state, you need to solve the above equation of polynomials, and you basically need to count the number of solutions, the gamma, then that corresponds to the number of ground states in the system. So, I mean, this doesn't say anything physical. Oh, 1/2 comes from the fact that you have 2 X type and Z type.
But if you don't have
the
vector case, you get exactly number of constants.
if I don't have a fractal,
right. And you get the equality.
So when the system doesn't have any fractal, which means A and B is equal to 1, so yeah, so all the gamma satisfy the solution. So
this one up is for the system in the cube?
In the
on a single cube. So what is one up?
One half is just one half. Is one half.
It's for the system with a specific size?
Yeah, with specific size. I'm considering
what
the system
size?
L1, L2, L3.
Equal 1. No.
Sorry?
It's for the cube with the size
L1, L2, L3. And this formula holds
so
for
you,
arbitrary L1, all the L1, L2.
Yeah, but this solution is for this specific one cell.
Specific? No. Gamma are polynomials.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to find a solution for this equation, this polynomial equation.
L1, L2, L3 are the size,
in
different, the whole
thing. Yes. L1 is in X direction, L2 is Y, L3 is Z.
So maybe I just misunderstood the rule. This means equal 1/2 times the number of ground states?
Equal 1/2 of number of ground states, yes.
Okay. I thought the number of ground states was a comment to 1/2. So that's why
sorry.
I was very
thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, so that's all about ground state properties. So,
do you have any consideration about this entanglement spectrum?
Entanglement spectrum.
Entanglement
entropy.
Pavlov entropy.
It seems
that suppose you pick the sign of the system where only one degenerate ground state, one ground state.
Okay.
Then you divide the system into parts. Then what's the?
Okay. So I computed the entanglement entropy.
Yes.
And then, so it's three dimensions. So
yes.
You will have first the area-like term,
yeah.
Then linear term, and constant term.
Yeah.
And this, you have linear term for these fractal systems.
I see. But whether we can do the subtraction to subtract linear term out?
Whether
the only constant term universal, other term all non-universal?
I don't know what they mean by universal, but even if you change the whole system size, this linear time survives.
No, it's funny. If you do some certain subtraction, so you may get a term which do not depend on the size and shape of your partition.
Ah.
Or whether such combination can be obtained. I think in three dimension you may have a three sphere like a shell with a two hole in
three
bottom, and then do some subtraction like that. Yes.
Okay, I only computed the entanglement entropy for cubic region.
Oh, I see.
And yes. Because this model doesn't have a continuous scale symmetry anymore. So I suspect the entropy really sensitive to the region.
To the region size.
Region size, and also how you take boundaries, and so on.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Maybe not, but yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, so do you have any example which ground state appearance divided is the unique one? And
yes.
But it still has vector
No.
The ground state is
if there is only a single ground state, you don't have logical operator. Because logical operators are responsible for transformations of ground states. So. So now that's all about T equals zero properties. So now let's look at excitations. As you know, in TQFD, you have anions. Anions with very peculiar statistics. But for these models, quasi-particles are even more peculiar. They are not free anymore. So I'm going to consider a case where A is equal to 1 plus x squared and B is equal to 1 plus x. Then suppose I have some isolated single excitation at this position, the origin 0, 0, 0. I'm going to apply Hurley GA operator. Then this will actually make the excitation move in y direction. But this will split into multiparticles. So the positions of multiparticles are recorded in AX. So it will split into three particles.
So here the edge have no energy, only comma have energy. That's your definition of quasi particles.
So yes. So I'm defining the quasi particles by the violation of stabilizers.
By what?
Violations of stabilizers, which means so originally ground state has all eigenvalues plus one for stabilizer generators.
I see.
So if it gets minus one, I say that, there
okay,
is. So this is the case I applied GA. But if you apply GB, now it gets into Z direction and split into two, 1 plus x. So it's weird, and it's highly constrained. So it's not free anymore. And if you apply GA and GB, it will split into two.
Are they the same quasi particle with the same energy? They have same energy, but they may not have same.
So each particle has the same energy,
yeah.
Which means energy increased. Right. Yeah. So this is not the...
But are they same particle, or they are different type of particle?
The same particle.
They are same type of particle.
Same type means...
Means whether locally these three looks like the original one?
Looks like the original one. They are coming from the...
Same stabilizer operator.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So, all I know is its propagations are highly constrained and not free. But somehow you can characterize the propagations of quasi particles by using polynomials. Because if you want to go to in y direction, you need to apply A. If you want to go in Z direction, you need to apply B. And probably one of the most interesting questions is the following: when the system is totally free from string-like logical operators. And in a paper by, beautiful paper by Bravi and Ha, they proved that if the system does not have string-like logical operators, or in other words, there is no point-like quasi-particle excitation, then the system will work as a self-correcting quantum memory with logarithmic energy barrier. That's a very great thing for quantum information processing purposes. But now, yep.
Is this in the stabilizer formula, or can you project this, or does it do it?
Ah, that's a good question. Let me see.
I think this is true for stabilizers.
Stabilizers, I think, because I think logarithmic energy barrier implies this, but that's limited to I think
stabilizers.
Okay, so the question is when the system is free from string-like logical operators, and In the case of quantum fractals, it's easy to derive the necessary and sufficient condition. That is when, so if a pair of finite integers satisfying the following equation does not exist, then we know that the system is free from string-like logical operators.
Yeah, so this is basically related to my question before. My question basically means, can you break the logical operator in smaller
parts
such that the energy barrier is finite?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the question. Can you break in a way that
then I need to see the form of A and B, and I need to check if they...
So basically I'm asking whether you have an energy barrier that is tame somehow.
When there is no string-like logical operators, then we know that we have logarithmic energy barrier. That's
okay.
Proven by Bravi and Hall.
So, and this applies to this point?
Yes.
Okay.
That's it has to be logic, logarithmic, or they can be even higher barrier.
Could be even higher.
Or at least logarithmic.
At least logarithmic, and I'm not aware of any model which is, has larger energy value this moment.
So for this four-dimensional Courier code, that's a logarithmic or linear?
Linear.
Oh, that's linear. So that's better than this one.
Mm-hmm. And for this construction model, you only have one constraint to each side. As a result, the model I get always undergo phase transition at t equals zero. So it does not have thermal stability. So, yeah. Then, well, finally, coding properties. And but this part is really incomplete. And again, it's very, very difficult problem to, I think, find lower bounds on the code distance of these models. And I only succeeded in mapping the problem to some mathematical problem. I don't know if I should explain it or not, but so you basically consider a sort of decomposition of polynomials A and B by using tensors, and you count the weight of the tensors. Then the minimum of the weight of the tensors gives you a lower bound on the code distance. But so I reduced the problem to some mathematical problem, but seems it's still difficult to handle this problem.
Yeah, so you don't know what is the code distance here?
No.
So there could be smaller logical operators?
Could be, or actually always, usually you can shrink it. Yeah. Meaning that, usually it's much smaller.
I see.
But of course it's rather than order well, because there is no string like logical operators. Okay, so finally, in summary, in this talk, I constructed the following model, quantum fractal. So 1 plus AY, 1 plus BZ, and A and B polynomials generate fractal shapes. But I think the question is whether this framework is general, in particular, whether can we represent the original cubic code as quantum fractal code. And it turns out you need a small minor extension but to the quantum fractal code. But you can represent the cubic code in a sort of similar line. And as for coding properties, at this moment, it's totally open to me. And it's very difficult. But maybe it may saturate the bound, or it may not saturate the bound. That's totally open to me at this moment. But well, yeah, that's it. So thank you very much.
So we already had many questions in line with the talk, who have many wisdom about it. Are there further questions, like more general ones, or material? No, if not, then let's thank him again for this.